What's up, inquisitive peeps? Welcome back to another Inquisitive Beast podcast. Firstly, before I introduce today's guest, I just want to say a massive thank you for everyone who has commented, sent messages of support, and also tips. I've had a lot of great little tips from people around how to make the podcast better. So that is all massively appreciated. And I'm really loving the fact that all you ladies and gents get to come on this journey with me, and it makes it so much more enjoyable to know that people are listening. So thank you very much for doing so. Today, I've got on a gent called Dale Walker, who I heard on Paul Check's Living 4D podcast. I'll put a link to that in the description. Dale talks very well about all things kind of physical therapy, really. That's his background, but loads of stuff, and ends up interviewing Paul really on this podcast. It was great to listen to, and I thought he mentions he does CrossFit, so I was like, well, what better person to get onto my podcast, as I work at two CrossFit facilities. And Dale has a big background in sports rehabilitation. He's got a number of different degrees and certs in physiotherapy and sports exercise medicine. Has a company called Bulletproof Bodies, which he has an ebook and some other video links, which I'll put in the description around that. Is an ex-army physical training instructor, ex-Royal Marines commando, and has just done kind of everything with high intensity kind of functional fitness as well. So working at regional level comps and local comps. So really knows his stuff. And I thought, what a better guest to get on to the podcast, which, as I mentioned, is a breadcrumb podcast where I ask questions of people that knows more in a particular subject than I do, and Dale is a perfect candidate for that. You'll hear me kind of very much stop talking and let Dale do the talking, and he comes across really well, and I think he has a wealth of knowledge. So I really hope you enjoy this podcast. I certainly did. It was a pleasure to do. So again, thank you to Dale for coming on and doing it. Again, please, as I mentioned at the beginning, share all your feedback, good or bad. And hopefully you'll notice all the little tweaks that I'm trying to put into the podcast to make it better for you. So yeah, enjoy this one. Let me know if you've got any questions or feedback, and click all the links in the description for all the places to go. See you on the next one, team. Bye. Okay, welcome back to another Inquisitive Beast podcast. As ever, it's my journey to try and seek out and ask questions of people more knowledgeable in certain spaces than I. And today I have someone very, very capable in the hands of Dale Walker, who I came into contact with via a Paul Check podcast, and was just blown away by Dale's knowledge and the way that he crafted the podcast with Paul. It was the first time I'd heard someone on someone else's podcast actually be the person running and hosting the podcast. Dale is also a CrossFitter as well. So I thought with that and his knowledge of the in-depth functional space and healing space, it'd be a great person to get on and have a chat with today. Dale, welcome. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to come speak to me.
Josie, it's an absolute honor and a pleasure, my friend. So looking forward to having a chat about obviously CrossFit and some other stuff as well.
Brilliant. Thanks, mate. We were just having a brief chat beforehand, and I wanted to hit record because we were starting to really get into some really cool topics, and I think you've got an amazing perspective on, because for those that maybe haven't come across you or your company Bulletproof Bodies, you work within the healing space and do some lecturing as well all around physiotherapy, and you work CrossFit competitions. You kind of probably from a CrossFit point of view see more people doing CrossFit coming to you with certain injuries and things like that, so have a really good breadth of knowledge and experience when dealing with CrossFitters. And I thought, as I do CrossFit, as many people that I coach do CrossFit, you'd have a really great perspective on CrossFitters and CrossFit health and how we can link that together.
Yeah, I've certainly got opinions because everyone has opinions about CrossFit, and I think first and foremost, you know, I love CrossFit. I think it's brilliant. It's given me so many different gifts. It's given me a community. It's given me the same rush that I used to get in the Royal Marines. It's that kind of, you know, that kind of training, and the community, as I've said, but really just pushing the human performance and experience. And where I come in is, rather than work on the performance side, I work on injury prevention, treatment, and management of high-level athletes and also recreational athletes as well.
Yeah, and one thing I got a sense when you're talking to Paul, and Paul's really driven I don't even know how to describe Paul now. He's kind of looking at all aspects of the human condition, if you like, from spiritual to physical to emotional, and connecting the pieces. And one thing that I was really taken back with when you were talking to him was just the real world application of some of the elements of that emotional, physical link to something like functional fitness, like CrossFit, as well. So I think you've got, again, from my knowledge and from my experience, you've got a really great handle on kind of how to apply a lot of the theory around that as well. It'd be great to kind of understand, to kick us off, in terms of CrossFit, how you see that. You talked about it, the human performance element, but how you see kind of managing that for an everyday athlete, or what your thoughts are on that, kind of maybe kick us off.
Yeah, thanks for that, Jozy. So basically, I do research on CrossFit. I've been treating CrossFit athletes for 10 years. I was treating CrossFit athletes in Afghanistan, the US Marines, before I even knew what CrossFit was.
Oh, wow.
I had a unique insight into the injury side first, and then I've been doing CrossFit for 7 years. I was at CrossFit Trafford a couple of weeks ago, throwing down with my partner, Hannah. I do it as well recreationally. So let's divide all CrossFitters into four different types.
Okay.
So the first type is the beginner, someone that's new to CrossFit. And I think you're going to be a beginner in CrossFit for about a year.
Okay.
So the skills that you need to have as a coach, you know this, Jarzy, you need to have so many skills. It's going to take you a minimum of a year to even get into it. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think to build that base. I mean, I've experienced a few high-level sportsmen and women that maybe haven't got some of the skill acquisition, but have come in, let's say a rugby player who's played at a solid level comes in with a good strength and fitness capability. But generally, I'd say certainly for someone coming off the couch, if you like, or someone that's done maybe just a bit of recreational training, yeah, a year's a good, really good amount of time for a beginner.
Yeah. So don't forget, my CrossFit level one coach has expired now, because I did it back in the day with Carl Stedman, who's an awesome coach.
OG.
But he is the original gangster, isn't he? Salute to Carl if you're out there. But so you've got the beginner.
Okay.
And then the next level is the recreational CrossFitter. This is someone that's training 2-3 maybe 4 times a week, and they're just doing it for fun. They love the community. They might do the odd inter box competition, but really they're a recreational athlete. The next level after that is when they've transitioned from recreational athlete and they want to be a competitor. So here in Manchester, we've got the Rainhill Trials, which is a great starting competition. It's not the CrossFit Games. It's a feeder for people that want to throw down and experience CrossFit in terms of the competition side of things. And then you've got the next level, which is the elite. And these are, the physiological freaks. These are the genetically superior people. They are born to do CrossFit, and CrossFit has found these people. They're probably quite generalist in their athletic ability. They're great all-rounders, and we've established a new kind of polysport athlete. And these elite athletes are the fittest I've ever seen. So those four levels again: beginner, recreational, competitor, and elite. So that's how I divide my CrossFit guys into those four categories. Okay. Have you got any other categories that you might think of there?
No, I think I was just you started talking about that, and I was like, wow, that's, I mean, very logical, but one of those things that unless you've thought about, kind of stops you a little bit in your tracks. And yeah, I think that's a really great way of segmenting CrossFit athletes into four buckets, and a great explanation of what those characteristics are. Where do you go next with or how do you kind of determine those? Is it just a time based thing? Is it kind of experience, as you mentioned?
That's a great question. So really, I've divided them into four in terms of injury prevention, treatment, and management. Okay. So the beginner, all the literature in CrossFit, and there's not a huge amount, but the literature says that if you're a beginner, you are vulnerable to injury because there's a spike in your load, i.e. you've gone from maybe doing some recreational sport. Now you're doing 150 wall balls. Now you're doing kipping pull-ups. Now you're doing handstand push-ups. So there's a massive spike in your load, which means that as your tissue adapts and your nervous system adapts to that, you are more vulnerable. So there's more injuries associated with CrossFit in the first year while your body kind of adapts to it. Then the recreational athlete is already adapted to that load. And then when they become a competitor, there's another spike in their load. Yeah. So they start training harder, lifting heavier, pushing the envelope of human performance. So another spike in their load until they reach elite, where they're competing at this elite level. They're robust now because they're physiologically adapted to those demands. So the way I divided it is purely based on vulnerability. Okay. So the beginner is vulnerable because of that spike in load, and the new competitor is vulnerable again because of the same spike in load.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And with those, are there kind of particular injuries that you see each of those four buckets start to show, or are there things that you would, or if I kind of reverse engineer a little bit as a coach, are there things that I should look to do with each of those characters to help transition them to the next stage if they're interested in progressing through those?
Yeah, obviously as the coach, and this is the disadvantage with group exercise. You know, I'm a group exercise instructor myself, have been for 20 years. So when you're doing group exercise, you have to, because of the nature of what's going, do a kind of one size fits all approach. And the only way, and the great thing about CrossFit is it allows you to scale the weight and the movement. So you can have advanced people doing, I don't know, muscle ups, and then you've got the new people doing, jumping pull ups. So you can train the elite and the beginner together. That's really good. The disadvantage of that is that, we all squat in a different way because of the way that we're built and our previous motor patterns and our limitations of movement. So, it's impossible to coach everyone in that kind of one size fits all environment. And CrossFit does the best job of that. So what we're seeing is really, or as the physio, we need to make sure that we're teaching a movement that's particular to that individual. And this can only be done with assessment. So I spend a lot of my time, normally somebody comes to me when they're a recreational athlete, and I'm having a look at their basic movements, and they haven't got the basic movements down. They've got spinal flexion when they deadlift. They've got poor squatting technique with regard to their foot position and creating a stable arch. And a lot of time it's just going back to the basics. They haven't listened to the coach. They want to, beat the drum early. And people want to progress too quickly, too soon, driven by their ego, even though the coach is holding them back. And I was just as guilty. I came from the Royal Marines. I thought, CrossFit, I'm going to smash this. And I had to be humble and I had to take myself back to the beginning because I wasn't very good.
Yeah, you kind of get, I think anyone who's been doing CrossFit for a little while, especially those that end up coaching it at all, definitely have been through that experience themselves. I have very similar stories as well of myself when I kind of got into it. I'm from a competitive background of ice hockey and inline hockey, and kind of thought I could just plow through it, and realized very quickly that I couldn't. And even got a bit of a nickname when I first started CrossFit for kind of putting too much on the bar and going too heavy and too soon. So I was forced through load and repetitions to kind of take my step foot off the gas a little bit and eat a bit of humble pie. But yeah, it's interesting that we have to decelerate sometimes to be able to accelerate in the future.
That's a great way of putting it.
Is there kind of for you some markers that you're like, I mean, you've obviously talked about squat mechanics and deadlift mechanics, but let's not the immediacy, but like, let's say someone's coming in and they're aching every day. Is that a sign to you that maybe that's it? Or, I mean, because I think that there's a, for me, and again, I'm not as experienced as you in this, but I see people on a daily basis like, oh, I'm sore today. And it's almost become this slight colloquial language of, if I'm not sore, then I'm kind of not done it right. So I'm sore every day. Rather than, and it's DOMS rather than actually I've slightly damaged my shoulder through kipping pull-ups. Like, what, how do you kind of depict that or separate that?
Yeah, so great question. So we come, before we do that, to answer your question, the majority
of injuries I see. I get ahead of myself. You might have to rein me in sometimes.
No, it's all good. The majority of injuries I see will be shoulder injuries and lower back injuries. So they are the injuries most associated with CrossFit. So any sort of power limping or Olympic limping, the lower back is more vulnerable. Any sort of gymnastic movement or overhead pressing movement, again, the shoulder is more vulnerable. And we talk about vulnerability because, you know, you can do high volumes of these things without problems. But back to the question that we asked, the CrossFit principle, when I did my level one, they tell you that it's 3 days on, 1 day off is the cycle that you should do. And it was really cleverly designed. So you might, for instance, do a strength day, and then you might do a Metcon day, and then you might do a skills day, and then you have a day off. And then the process starts all over again. So, you know, the rest days are put in there on purpose. So 3 days on, 1 day off. We call this like a crash cycling. So if in periodization as well. So effectively, you hit the athlete for 3 days hard, they get a day to recover, and then you do it all again. Okay. However, that model doesn't really fit in with the 5 day week and the 2 day weekend. So people tend to do CrossFit 5 days a week, or potentially they do something every day. And then that's problematic, because if you're not resting, you're not healing. And then you've got into this kind of exercise addiction side of things, where, you know, you're effectively overtraining and in denial that you're overtraining.
Yeah.
And then you're competing with others. And that's when you're going to be more likely to be injured. So we use something called acute chronic workload ratio.
Okay.
So basically, if you come from very low level and you've gone to high level, there's a spike in your training, then you're going to be at increased risk of injury. It's all to do with load and increasing activity, too much, too soon, too quickly, not adapted. But the converse side of that is if you do CrossFit less than three days a week, you're more likely to get injured. So if you're only doing CrossFit once or twice a week, your chance of injury is higher than if you train three or four times, because your tissues are beginning to adapt to the load.
Right.
So there is a sweet spot between, you've got to be training three or more times a week, but definitely less than seven times a week. And then obviously, if you've done a competition, or, you know, you've gone for a CrossFit total, or you've had, you know, like a heavy, heavy, tough workout, you've gone for, I don't know, max Fran time or whatever you want to do, then you've got to take enough time off to recover. And that's definitely not happening. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that it's everyone, well, not everyone. That's a very broad generalization. What I tend to see a lot in the gym is that because you get used to a certain volume of training and you get used to the pattern, like you say, I go every day, I see my same group of friends, and I'll just do whatever the workout is on the board. That often every workout's treated the same, or it's factored in the same way. And you look at 60 kilos is always 60 kilos to you, or whatever the weight is, rather than looking at it based on movement, based on feel that day, based on previous day's training. For sure, it kind of gets, you're right. I think things like Fran, for instance, oh, it's 42 and a half. It's not that heavy. I've got pull-ups. Actually, the combination of those two movements in the rep scheme that they are, and the time it normally takes to do that workout, is a very different stimulus to if I change that into an EMOM, or if I changed the rep scheme, or if I changed that to actually even a heavier weight, could be less impactful on the body. And I think that doesn't always get taken into consideration, certainly by the everyday athlete kind of going in, doing the training session with their friends before work?
Yeah, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? You want that sweet spot between under-training and over-training. And because CrossFit is addictive and it's fun, I love going to the CrossFit box. You know, I love my CrossFit workouts. But, if I feel tired or I'm not going to perform, then I don't go.
Yeah.
And I'll do something else instead, because CrossFit is quite specific in the sense that if you go, you got to turn up and perform. You can't just go and give it a half-assed effort. And that's where people get into this kind of overtraining cycle. And then once they're tired and the tissues are not really recovering, then they're going to say, oh, well, I did a deadlift, or I did a squat, or I was doing some kipping pull-ups, and then something just went.
Yeah.
And then if you have a look at what's going on, you'll see the fact that there was some obvious signs that they've been overtraining and under recovering. And the other thing is that with these movements, you've got to do some accessory movement around them. So if you come on my course as well, I've got two courses, Bulletproof Shoulder and Bulletproof Back, where we go through some local stability exercises just to see how you can stabilize locally. Because if you fatigue your stabilizers and you're still trying to fire the cannon from the canoe, then you're going to get in trouble with that. I came from a gymnastic background, 15 years of gymnastics, and we did lots and lots of isometric work. Yeah. And lots of conditioning. And we had to condition for the movements that we were doing. So for instance, if you're doing toes to bar or bar muscle ups, you have to do conditioning in order to get there. And say, for example, you've been on a strength cycle, you've been getting strong, you got six, eight, maybe 12 weeks of increasing your Olympic lifting or your powerlifting, and you haven't done any bar muscle ups or ring muscle ups for maybe 12 weeks, you're deconditioned for that movement. And therefore at increased risk of injury. Have you found that?
Yeah, for sure. I love that you've got of firing a cannon from a canoe. I've heard you say that before on the Paul Cech podcast.
It's from Paul Cech. It's a Paul Cech thing. I've got to give him props.
Yeah,
for that.
That's such a good saying, and it's true, because I've been so guilty of that. I still sometimes fall into that trap, because I almost think it's almost a little bit more dangerous when you become a bit more capable, when you're able to do stuff like handstand push-ups, but you maybe haven't built up the... Like I've always, coming from a hockey background, my shoulders and rugby, I spend a lot of time playing contact sports and never put my arms above my head. So my shoulders have always been a problematic area, certainly on stability. And then I got into bodybuilding, so I ended up getting this slightly rounded physique because, bench and rows of life. It ended up becoming very problematic in my CrossFit career to be able to do handstand push-ups and even just support myself on a wall for a long period of time. And I'm having to still try and develop that base where I can confidently, comfortably do things like overhead walking lunges and things like that, because the stability element is just not there for me. So I fully agree with that, and really interested to hear your kind of take and thoughts on how to build that up. And those courses are definitely something that I myself will be looking into, because I need to, I think that as coaches as well as individuals, we need to understand our physiology and how to what we should be capable of before we start progressing.
Yeah, I mean, if you come from a sport, for instance, like ice hockey, your sport, you're used to, fast pace, your hip AB and AD adductors are going to be strong, so your pelvic stability is going to be good, and you'll be great, with the shoulder movements below 90 degrees. But if you're doing shoulder movements above 90 degrees, chances are your latissimus dorsi is a bit mm-hmm. tight. And then consequently, when you do overhead work, you'll compensate by arching your lower back.
Yep.
And
me and Dale have never met, and you've already pretty much diagnosed my biggest problem. One of my biggest problems, my lower back just fatigues when I've ever got anything overhead. And it's like my shoulders have actually got pretty good at range to them now. But I'm still trying to get that upper flexion through my spine effectively. So my my thoracics are still really tight. So it just loads my lower back terribly when I'm upside down.
Yeah, so that increases your vulnerability to injury, you see. And unless that's addressed by someone that knows what they're doing, when you're doing anything over, heavy overhead, you're going to have to scale respectively. Because if you don't, your lower back's vulnerable. But, we'd need to have a look at you, because this is common in lots of people that come from different sports as well. Latissimus dorsi tightening, it's hard to stretch your lats. It's difficult. It's not something that's done. You're going to have to foam roll. There's going to be some conditioning exercises, some physio exercises that are kind of a bit low level, that nobody likes doing, the kind of accessory work, if you like, enabling you to do CrossFit, lots and lots of isometric work, which is really important. We know that isometric and stability around a joint first before we start moving it through speed and load. This thing about the lats being tight, having trouble stabilizing overhead, that's really common, and it's easily addressed in my course, obviously, as we do bulletproof shoulder. I'll give you an invitation to that if you invite me down south.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. It's on the podcast now, so it's official. But 100%, yeah, I'd love to, and I think that. That kind of stuff is really, and it's really funny. It's just, we've never met, you've never seen me, but you've pretty much exactly described kind of what's going on based on the fact that obviously the body kind of doesn't lie in a lot of respects. It is the way it's built. And even through us not meeting, I mean, my lats are quite overdeveloped anyway. And often when people see them, they're like, oh, you've got massive lats. And it's not really that they're massive. It's just that, like you say, they're very imbalanced and they're often not stretched out properly, so they kind of look overblown. So just to reiterate that is exactly what the case, and it's interesting to hear you kind of talk about that from my perspective, that we've never met, and you've pretty much diagnosed exactly what one of my biggest struggles. So it's evident that CrossFitters listening to this might also be like, oh, that sounds like me. And the learning about your own body and doing these sorts of courses is definitely something that I would encourage other, even if you're an everyday CrossFit, it's just my sport to keep me healthy and fit. Learning about your body is no bad thing, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree totally. So I work the other side of coaching. So coaches work with performance. They do a fantastic job. They're very well educated. They're very good at preventing injury themselves. Most CrossFit box owners and coaches will do CrossFit to a high level themselves. They are the best coaches within the fitness industry for sure. And the industry polices itself. However, we're all learning together. And when you start throwing new workouts into the mix, nobody knows what's going to happen, because these workouts are quite random. You don't know when you're going to fatigue. You don't know how your body's going to respond. We've seen some weird and wonderful injuries. For example, I was working at Strength in Depth earlier this year, one of the sanction events in London, a regional athlete that I've been looking after for a little while had injured themselves, not badly, but had injured themselves doing devil's press because they'd not been familiar with the movement, and they've just, they're fit, they're a regional level athlete, and all of a sudden the movement's caught them out. The transition from this kind of like kettlebell swing with the dumbbells into the burpee movement had caught them off guard. So when you're introducing new movements and the athletes aren't familiar with the task, they're not adapted to it. They're not, because they've got to do the spread of skills is huge, and everyone's got their own weaknesses, whether it's bar muscle ups, handstand walking, double unders, everyone's struggling on something. But, when you introduce new movements like the devil's press, which, we might see more and more, you're going to have new injuries, people underestimating the technique, or there's too much lumbar flexion with what they're doing. And the other thing that we haven't really talked about is age, because below the age of about 35, 40, you can pretty much do anything.
Don't say that, Dale. I'm turning 36 in October, and if I'm honest, I'm still a little I'm still a little uncomfortable with it. I might look, some people tell me I don't look it, but I still start to feel it more and more.
Well, you know, you've got to, if you want to stay doing CrossFit, then you've got to maintain, you've got to do lots of stretching, you're making sure you're doing your yoga, your Pilates, making sure that you're foam rolling, making sure that you're doing your stability exercises, as well as all the CrossFit workouts on top of that in terms of lifting heavy and all your gymnastic skill work. But if you're over the age of 40, then you are more vulnerable naturally. Okay. You're tighter, you're not as well conditioned, you're not going to recover as much. Okay, and I'm the wrong side of 40, so I know this from personal experience as well. You know, I can't do 3 days in a row of CrossFit anymore. I have to do two and then take a break. So you've got to train athletes very differently if they're under the age of 35 and then over the age of 35. You know, the master's athlete needs some special love, care and attention, and the coaches need to be mindful of that.
And that's great advice, and it's something that I've become more aware of as I've got a bit older, and the you know, my girlfriend says to me, "You're not that old," and I'm like, "I'm not that old, but I definitely do feel different." Like the one, and then a couple of years ago, when I would say I was more in my CrossFit prime, and everything I just seemed to take to it like a duck to water, and nothing really ever started hurting. And then as I got older, stress started affecting me differently, and I found that I was having to do more of the accessory stuff, more stretching, become more aware of things like that. Foam rolling is an interesting one, because I kind of see a lot of people go back and forth on whether it's really useful, and I see a lot of people saying for the amount of time it takes, the bang to buck reward of it isn't as high. Are you a big proponent of foam rolling? What do you think about that?
Well, I would agree. So if you're listening to Kelly Starrett and you've got a lacrosse ball and an old school foam roller, you're living in the dark ages. So I work for Pulse Roll, which is a vibrating foam roller, and this is a game changer. And
it's not just like a techie fad that you kind of like. You know, it's you genuinely think that the electric foam rollers legit.
Yeah, and the reason being is that it's quite simple. It vibrates. And the vibration increases your pain pressure threshold. So what happens is that you can lean on the foam roller more. You can put more pressure and your body will experience less pain.
Okay.
And that is going to save you time and energy. Because the foam roller, you know, when you get on the foam roller, you have to psych yourself up for it, don't you? You have to go, all right, I've got 5 or 10 minutes of this horrendous thing. You know, put on some good music or watch something on your phone. It's unpleasant. Whereas if you're using Pulse Roll, because it vibrates, it increases your pain pressure threshold, so you can press more, so it's more effective, and it's also saving you time as well. So, you know, I use Pulse Roll. I've just been working with Pulse Roll so that I'm in charge of their education side of things, so that we can use the Pulse Roll effectively. So what we need to do with the foam roller is this, you know, assess and then reassess. So, for example, if you want a better squat, foam roll your car. Well, measure your knee to wall.
Yeah.
So what you do is you put your foot about 10 centimeters back from the wall. Can you keep your heel down and get your knee to touch the wall? And then you want to make sure you do that both sides, because you want symmetry. Otherwise, one side is going to be rotating more than the other. And then use your foam roller or your pulse roll and then reassess. And you should see an increase in range of movement. If you don't, your foam rolling is ineffective. Okay. So, you know, I'm a big advocate of foam rolling. So, but it is painful and time consuming. Whereas if you use Pulse Roll, less.
And what are your thoughts on things like the Theragun and those kind of electric mechanical pulsing guns, effectively? Like there's Theragun and there's a few of them now. What do you think of those kind of soft tissue massages?
Well, Pulse Roll have just released their version. Plug.
For it. I haven't got any sponsors or anything either. So if anyone, if it ever gets to a point where I need sponsors, I shall hit them up. But okay, cool. So they've got their own version as well, Pulse Roll.
Yeah, so I was working in an event for AEE Avalanche endurance events, like they do the fan dance in the Brecon Beacons, which is like the SAS selection march. And we use the guns there exclusively that weekend, and people really enjoyed them. When I was working at Strength and Depth, we're using the guns again because it allows you to deal with the tissue quicker. So before you do your soft tissue massage, you can decrease the tone of the muscle, increasing the quality of the muscle faster. So when I worked at CrossFit Regionals, in Denmark and Spain, respectively, before regionals was defunct, the best athletes have the most relaxed muscle later on in the day. So basically, if you tighten after your workouts, you're not as conditioned as the athletes that can stay relaxed. So this is why things like Compex are so popular with helping you recover. And this is why the Theraguns are also good as well, because what they do is they're just decreasing that muscle tone, allowing that extensibility of the tissue. So what you're doing is making sure that you haven't got any adhesions there, and it just feels good, so that the body responds to the good feeling. You have to feel it to believe it. The great thing about CrossFit athletes is they do foam roll, they do stretch, everyone's doing yoga or run ward or whatever, and they do look after themselves better than any other athlete I've come across. So they have taken responsibility. What do you advise your athletes to do in terms of mobility and foam rolling?
Foam rolling is a bit of an interesting one, because I kind of feel that I see a lot of people lie on foam rollers and kind of go through motions. I find them quite useful tools for things like, again, I talked about my thoracic mobility. So lightly kind of with a warble or something overhead, and then kind of get on a foam roller just to open up areas as well, useful. But certainly highly recommend stuff like Romwod, or I know there's a new one I think called GoWod, or anything where you stretch and breathe, even if that's just figuring out some stretches the coach shows you and doing 10 minutes a day of stretching and breathing in tight areas or problem areas for you. I've seen big results for lots of people through mobility, and that's going to have good carryover, even if it's just deloaded drills and working with a PVC pipe or a dowel or something, and just overhead squatting and working into those areas, sitting in squat position. I highly recommend all that kind of stuff from a coach perspective. It's the foam roller stuff. It's a weird thing, because it's kind of personal to everyone, I think, in terms of whether you get on with them or not. Sometimes I think they're really useful. Sometimes I think something like a lacrosse ball I find immensely useful to get into a really tough triggered area. I have to admit, this is kind of an area where I have some knowledge in, but certainly not as much as you. So I find it very interesting to hear your thoughts on the value add and how people can adopt these tools. Because I think we kind of, one of the great things about CrossFit is that we do take a lot of care as athletes and coaches of people. But the other thing is, we're really quick to jump on bandwagon sometimes, and it's like, oh, the new tool, the new thing, right? This is a thing that we're all going to, someone comes out with a new shoe, suddenly everyone's got the new Metcons or whatever it is. We're quite easy to pick up on the new things, which is great, but sometimes that means that we necessarily don't always do it in the right manner, I think, or we can kind of go down a rabbit hole that perhaps wasn't what was necessary. We could get the same results doing something else. So that's why I'm interested to get your thoughts on it and kind of reaffirm, I guess, my thoughts.
Yeah, I obviously, as a mature athlete myself, I have to foam roll, otherwise I can't make the shapes. So in order for me to get into deep squat, if I'm doing a squat snatch or a squat clean, I have to make sure that I'm rolling a good hour before I'm making shapes like that. Just because over years the tissue is sticky, I've got loads of adhesions, I've got adaptive shortening of hip flexors and all that sort of stuff. So I have to make sure I do my accessory work in order just to be able to do CrossFit. And if you get into the habit of learning how your body responds, what is your squat position like? What is your deadlift position like? What are you like in handstand? and you get familiar with that and you have a bit of coaching with that, that means that you can maintain the quality of the shape that you need to make for that particular activity. And that way you're less likely to get injured. Where CrossFitters do get injured is when there's this increase in load, this spike in load, or during competition. But by simply foam rolling, by stretching regularly, by knowing your body, most CrossFitters are great at doing this. They have significantly decreased injury and prevented a lot of stuff from happening. You know, the warm-ups in CrossFit are great. So the coaches do a great job of the warm-ups. I don't ever see them do a warm down. Because the time is, people are paying, so you've got to give them what they want. But sometimes giving them what they want is not what they need. Whereas if you spend 5 minutes at the end where everyone does the stretches together, everyone's mobilizing together, what that does is it shows the client the value of doing some post exercise stretching or some post exercise recovery.
Adding on to that, the something that I saw massive benefit in myself and have seen kind of in class as well is just breathing as well with those stretches, kind of like the almost yoga is, I believe it's called vinyasa, but the kind of breathing and bringing the heart rate back down as you're moving and mobilizing really has kind of quite strong effects, to kind of feeling the benefits of the workout, actually, even just walking out of the gym and just kind of feeling reinvigorated rather than smashed. I think that kind of has a good carryover as well. I don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah, it totally as well. So obviously my mentor is Paul Check, and Paul Check talks about working in as opposed to working out. So working in, the exercise I get my clients to do is something called breathing squats. So they're effectively just taking deep breaths in while they're just performing some relaxed squats, but they've got a heart rate monitor on, and the idea is not to do it as fast as you can. The idea is to do the squats with breath, making sure that the heart rate stays low. So this is the complete opposite of what we normally do in CrossFit. And what happens is that we need to stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system more, the rest and digest hormones that will help us recover. Because if you're taking your heart rate up to the maximum, okay, because you're doing, like extreme Metcons, you also need to be doing some relaxation, some mindfulness, and some calming exercises. Otherwise, you're just not balanced. And this is, again, where you can lean up with too much cortisol in your system, and that can lead to overtraining, and overtraining leads to injury. So we've got to create balance. You can't go into the CrossFit gym and just bang the drum every day. You've got to be clever. So it's not a case of training harder. It's a case of training smarter. And that's what the coaches are great for. How do you advise your athletes to train smarter rather than harder?
It's exactly that. And actually taking a bit of inspiration from both you and Paul on this, in the sense that, one thing, I think once you've been doing CrossFit for a little while, you start to really delve into more of the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous systems and what effect they have on the day-to-day basis. And I see, especially living in London and my clients all living and working in London, a lot of people are in that kind of sympathetic state a lot of the time. And they're looking to, I think we're seeing, or certainly I've experienced as well, trying to, and I think Paul articulated this really nicely on a podcast I was listening to with him, about you've kind of got these vibrations or this energy, which is high stress, high environment, high achiever, kind of putting a lot out. And then you balance that with the same thing in the gym, because you need that equal and opposite reaction. And there isn't the engaging the parasympathetic, there isn't that breathing, there isn't that working in to try at any point during the day. So I try and advise people, even if it's just after a workout, walking around the room and breathing through the nose to engage the parasympathetic nerve endings in the nostrils, and try and focus on deep breathing for around 6 seconds in inhalation and 6 seconds exhalation to try and bring that heart rate back to a steady place, and experimenting more with that and trying to actually build my knowledge based on that. So looking at different breathing practices, I think, is something that is definitely hot on my to-do list, and learning more and more about that, because I think it does, I've seen the benefit of it, and those that are meditated or becoming more mindful in their practices, I think, start seeing the benefit in their output and input.
Yeah, it is just the balance, because CrossFit is massive sympathetic overdrive, and that's where also you can fall into this kind of adrenal addiction, where people are sore but they're still training because they're so addicted to the adrenaline. Whereas if, for example, you were turning up at CrossFit, but one of the workouts at a certain time was where you just go through the movements, or you're working on some skill-based stuff, and you'd be like, no, today's rest day. I'm going to work on some of the movements. I'm going to work on some isolations. I'm going to work on some stability exercises as a valid workout, similar to the workout of the day. So effectively you're doing the, what we call a bulletproof, we call it the compensation WOD, the C WOD. So you're doing all these compensatory movements that you don't get in your normal workout. For example, in a lot of CrossFit athletes that do a lot of Olympic lifting, because they're doing the jump shrug all the time, that movement pattern of scapular elevation, it becomes ingrained in everything they do. And that it's only when you're doing ring dips or tricep dips that you're really engaging the lower traps, because you're pushing down as opposed to pushing up. So there's an example of a compensatory movement I see all the time with shoulders. So these massively hypertrophied upper trapezius, and then this weak and poorly stabilized lower trapezius, so that when the distal force couple is the proximal force couple is the upper traps, the lower traps, and the serratus anterior. And if that balance is out because your upper traps are so hypertrophied and you've not done any serratus work or any lower traps work, then that's a muscle imbalance, and that's going to cause you a mischief later on.
Absolutely.
So because you get this kind of adaptive hypertrophy of the upper trapezius, and then if you're doing squats on top of that, when you're back racking anything, obviously that fires up the upper trapezius, and people are not doing enough of the compensatory movement stuff, whereas if that was worked, you know, once a week, there's, you know, it's not yoga, it's effectively stopping you getting injury prevention
and
stuff.
That's really good point.
I
think that's such a great point, and it's something that, you know, you hear people say, I don't know why my traps hurt, like I haven't done any kind of upper body, like a scap work or anything like that, and they're feeling it, and it's because of that you come become ingrained with certain movement patterns that you then, that becomes your reliance, and you're not, and even especially in workouts where you're maybe not as mindful of your movement practices you are in a strength piece, for instance, so you do that repeated over and over and over and over again, so that your subconscious competency kind of, or unconscious competency I should say, kind of kicks in, and you end up doing that just as a matter of course now as your base level movement pattern. I think is a really good point to bring out, that, and it's difficult because there's a lot to be mindful of in CrossFit, but I think that's something that even just rings true of me and kind of makes me think again about my movement standards, even, because, you know, there are times where I'm like, I definitely do that, even though I'm kind of a bit more aware of it.
Yeah, virtuosity, you know, CrossFit HQ, you know, preaches about virtuosity, but, you know, making sure that your last rep is as good as your first rep. But that's really hard to do, and it's probably unrealistic, particularly when you're under, you know, speed, load, and fatigue. But we've, you know, what I'd like to see is, rather than, you know, you stay with a particular weight, that you actually decrease the weight during your workout, and, you know, you take the responsibility that, no, I can't lift that anymore with good form. I'm going to take the weight off, because that, you know, having to scale mid workout because I'm struggling. I can't do the movement anymore. So I'd like to see more people scaling, because as soon as you introduce pain into the system in a particular movement, then you're going to get a compensatory movement to kind of avoid the pain. And that will happen at a subconscious level. So we've got to be careful that we don't train through pain. That you know, you've got a no pain, K-N-O-W, to no gain. And it's important that we're not introducing these compensatory movements because they're very, very difficult to get rid of. They become our habits. Whereas if we just decrease the load or scale the movement down because we're fatigued and we can no longer do that, rather than pushing through and get this kind of completer finisher mentality, which is great if you're in competition, but not so good if you're in training, because it's going to increase your chance of getting injured. So how much coaching do you do in the workout with your clients?
It kind of depends on the movements, but I try and be fairly vocal with everyone and kind of go around and make sure that they're moving correctly and even trying to get them to think about things. And it might be non-directive kind of stuff around be mindful of these things and just giving a few things, because I don't want to distract from what they're doing and stop them from being mindful of how they're moving is generally my fundamentals that I try and practice, but I also want to make sure that everyone's moving well. So I'll only stop people if I see them that they've lost that good movement pattern that you're talking about. Or it might be a little cue to try and get them to do something slightly differently. Or it might just be, you know, something as simple as breathe, because you see people holding breath while they're holding a pose. Yeah. Or, you know, they've just pressed out and they're holding their breath while they're kind of doing shoulder to overhead, because it's the only way they can concentrate. So it's an amalgamation of things, but I think it's important to stay, to have some kind of dialogue and depends on, again, the output. If it's an 80% day, you want them to be able to acknowledge you and make sure that they're able to hear you. If it's a 90% day, then perhaps you're going to get a little less from them in terms of their responsiveness. But sorry to answer your question with, it depends how long a piece of string is kind of answer, but I very much try and adapt on the day of coaching and to the athlete and the situation.
Yeah, and that's the important thing, that you're adapting to the individual, because obviously no two athletes are the same, and they all require different coaching. And like I said, the coaching is fantastic in CrossFit. You know, the coaches get to know their athletes well. They tell them off when they need to be told off. They tell them to scale when they should scale. And they push them when they need to be pushed. But, you know, that is an art form. But the flip side of that is when you've got an athlete that keeps pushing or is pushing into pain, and they won't go and see the coach if they're injured. They come and see people like myself. And then once you uncover a few things, you follow the chain of dominoes into the fact that they've had this probably longer than they wanted, but they don't want to lose their fitness that they've gained. So they've put all this hard work and energy into the gym, but they don't want to lose that. So when people do get injured, you know, for instance, we've had, you know, broken wrists, people falling over or missing a lift or something like that. And when they're out, they're in the gym the next day in their cast, which is brilliant, because obviously we want to keep their fitness up as well. But a lot of them will try and come back too soon, too quickly, and they need that advice from somebody that knows what they're doing. And the coach can't be there to do that. That's not their job. You know, you need a medical health care professional to look after that. So sometimes the coach is given too much responsibility, and that's why it's great if you've got a therapist working with you in the box, because they take the pressure off the coach, because that's the healthcare professional skill set.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And again, that's kind of why I wanted to speak to you today about this kind of stuff, because I think, and I loved your point in the beginning about we're all working on this journey together. And I think that's a great way of framing it, that I think we kind of get a bit, I see quite a lot on social media, people get caught up in the whole stay in lanes sort of thing. And I think, you know, if I can learn from you more, it's going to make me a better coach, and it's going to enable me to know when I can help advise or when I maybe need to pass off better than if I just stay in my lane and don't try and at least pick up more skills or learn from people like yourself, or talk more and try and problem solve with the athlete, which I think is kind of my job as a coach, is to try and problem solve. But then if I identify that I can't solve the problem, or it's an actual injury that needs professional care, then having that dialogue again and trying to open up dialogue boundaries. And again, I think that's why it's really important what you're doing with this functional side of things. And, you know, you see a lot of physiotherapists that it's just, I think every coach has had the experience when an athlete comes back and they've gone and see an NHS physiotherapist, and not to rag on anyone, but just had this example where the physiotherapist has been like, "We'll stop doing CrossFit." And then you end up having to have quite a difficult conversation with that person that loves doing what they're doing, but has just been told by a medical practitioner to stop, when someone like yourself is like, no, keep doing CrossFit, but this is what we need to be careful of and mindful of, and this is what you need to speak to your coach about, and this is what we need to work on. And I think that's a really important part of the jigsaw puzzle, is like, how do we kind of do more functional health and functional medicine to enable people to kind of train like they want to train, but be respectful of their body and understand their limitations and help fix things when they go wrong.
Yeah, I think you've touched on a valid point, particularly the physiotherapy profession in the NHS have been very guilty of saying, if this thing is causing you pain, just stop it. That's not really fixing the problem. That's avoiding the problem. So when you come to a sports physio or osteopath, sports rehabilitator, chiropractor, and I've worked with many as well, they want to keep you going so you can do your activity, but there are caveats to that. So we always say get the athlete back in the box as soon as possible, because that's where their community is. You should never, you know, I wouldn't deprive you of seeing your friends. That would be psychologically cruel.
Very
wouldn't
true.
It? That's effectively what you're doing. You're separating that person. You're isolating them from their community. So they want to get back to that activity, but we understand the pros and the cons, where they need to do more, where they should be doing less, and giving the responsibility back to the individual to help them, you know, achieve what they need to achieve. If it's a skill, if it's strength, if it's more metabolic adaptation. But we certainly shouldn't be telling people just stop it, because that annoys me. And I get a lot of that, like CrossFit is dangerous. Very clearly, it's not dangerous. If you study my research on CrossFit, there are injuries associated with it. But if you look at, if you were to do 1,000 hours of CrossFit, your injury rate is between 3.2 and 2.8, which is the same as going to a Globo gym. And that's what the CrossFit community need to say, is that, you know, when we look at the evidence CrossFit causes injuries, there are injuries associated with it. But if we look, and there are movements that are more associated than others, you know, kipping in the shoulder is a classic example of all that sort of stuff. But, you know, no more than 3.8. So if we look at things like, if we look at swimming, you get one injury per 1,000 hours. If we look at walking, you get 1.2 injuries per 1,000 hours. Cycling, 2 injuries per 1,000 hours. Basketball, okay, or sprinting or football, you're looking at 9 injuries per 1,000 hours. So, you know, we wouldn't stop people playing rugby, football, tennis, ice hockey, would we? But yet we're having a go at CrossFit, and the evidence is between 2.8 and 3.2 injuries per 1,000 hours, which is still pretty low, and the same as going to the gym normally. And we need to be aware as a community of that number, that it's far more dangerous playing sport than it is doing
really
CrossFit.
Good point. And the whole point of CrossFit was kind of made to help people be better at their sports as well. There's a training methodology. It's a multifaceted training methodology from all intents and purposes. So, and that's really interesting to pull out and really valid. And it does it, that actually is something I didn't know. And, you know, I feel like I've learned a lot in the last almost hour. And that was a perfect kind of finisher, because I know we've got to wrap up in a minute, Dale. But, I agree. And I think that there are things that hopefully the listeners are like, you know, take from this and understand about CrossFit has. And I think your point at the beginning about vulnerability, what are you vulnerable in? Learn how to become less vulnerable and stronger in those areas, and you'll immediately decrease your risk of injury.
Yeah, we've also got to pat ourselves on the back, in the sense of that, in terms of, you know, preventable diseases, you know, physical inactivity, you know, being overweight or obese, high blood pressure, high cholesterol as well. These are things that are very really affecting our population. And CrossFit, by doing so much physical activity, you keep yourself healthy and effectively defeat all these preventable diseases just by staying fit and active. It also gives you a community. You know, in this day and age, we can feel a bit isolated, particularly with social media. And it gives you all those feel-good chemicals, you know, adrenaline, you know, dopamine, serotonin, yeah. oxytocin, because you're in that community, you're exercising as part of a community, part of your tribe, if you like. And that's how exercise should be. It should be fun. It should be enjoyable. And it should be a bit addictive, but we've just got to make sure that it doesn't become
that it's
too
balanced.
Addictive. And that, exactly. And that we're training for health and fitness, and we're not, you know, overtraining too much of a good thing and then causing ourselves a mischief or injury that will ultimately prevent us doing the thing that we want to do. So there's a big education piece around it. And that's why it's great that there's podcasts out there like yourself, Jarzy, so that we can truly live unbroken.
Mate, well, yeah, I can't really add anything else to that. That was perfect. So, summary of what we've talked about. And I mean, thank you very much again for taking the time and going through all of that. I could genuinely talk to you for another hour on this topic, and I found this immensely beneficial for myself, and hopefully the listeners have as well. I'll link all your details in the show notes, but you've got Bulletproof Bodies, which is your business, correct? And you're on Instagram as well.
That's right.
Dale Walker, and yeah, as I said, I'll link all your stuff, but in the show notes, so people can kind of find out more from you. Is there anything else? I mean, you mentioned a couple of your courses. Are they on Bulletproof Bodies? When can people find that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so we're having the summer off, doing a few bits and bobs. I'm at Battle Cancer in Manchester on the 3rd of August. So I'll be there. I'll normally work some of the sanction events as well, but we've got Bulletproof Bodies courses coming up that we're looking for boxes to run, because obviously there's a lot of people out there that want this information about shoulder injury prevention, treatment and management, and then lower back injury prevention, treatment and management. So we're specializing those two, but we'll let people know. We're on all the social medias, and obviously if you go to you go to the Bulletproof Bodies blog site, we've got our free ebook that just covers a few things about how to stop yourself getting injured in CrossFit. But I really enjoyed talking to you, Jarzy, and I hope some of that information was useful to
likewise,
your listeners.
And immensely useful. It was useful for me just to talk to you as well and kind of asking questions. And as I said, the podcast is all kind of about slightly selfishly me trying to learn, as and hopefully other people can kind of find that stuff useful as well. So I really do appreciate your time, Dale. Your wealth of knowledge, and it's really nice to hear someone that can articulate it in such a great way. So I appreciate you coming on today, mate.
No, it's been a lot of fun. And like I said, hopefully, you know, your listeners have got something out of it. If nothing else, you know, stretch, move, breathe, and balance your workout.
Great, great advice. And I will, as I said, try and keep up my end of the bargain, so if we can get you down in one of the boxes in London to do a course soon.